What are we starting with this week?
We review.
Oh, we review.
You were drinking, Luke. That was a bad move. Well done. So this one says, perfect balance of banter and fact. It's 5 stars. I love this podcast. It has just the right amount of facts and jokes. I learn something and laugh while I do. Best way to educate.
Is it like the sandwich ratio where it's like bread to filling? It's jokes to facts ratio.
Yeah, we got a high jokes to facts ratio.
We've got a good jokes to facts ratio.
It's like it's when you're running out of peanut butter, you know.
Yes.
And also you're running out of bread, so you've just got the end bits of the bread, the big thick end bits, and the tiny little sliver of peanut butter across that. You're spreading it thin. Shall we start the show?
Let's start. Oh, wait,
do you do you ever do 1-star reviews?
No,
we don't get 1-star reviews.
Of course not. We've had one.
We can keep this in, but I'm not joking. We've had one bad review, and I read it out. And since then, we've not had a single other bad review.
That's amazing.
Pretty good. We must make a good show.
Yeah. Don't leave bad reviews, though, because it's not funny. Leave 5-star reviews.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. It's not funny. It's not funny.
You can leave a 5-star review and say something bad in it if you want. That's fine. But the 5 stars, crucial. That's
5 stars. Yeah. 5 stars are key.
Thank you for 5 stars, everybody.
Thank you for 5 stars.
And if you're on Spotify, just stick your head outside your house and shout. We will hear it.
Let's start the show!
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jamp, and Luke Cuttenberth, and this time, very special guest, Liz.
You know what I should say?
What?
I'm on my period. Dun dun dun. That is what the show's about, right?
Oh,
they don't know this yet. They don't know it yet.
That makes a lot more sense.
Cut that out.
But this week we are talking about bleeding and breeding.
Oh yes, periods.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So this week.
So that's why Bliss decided to tell us that she's on her period. Because me and James don't know the topics before we start, so that was weird.
Bliss actually didn't know the topic either. She just let us know that one.
I was just sharing. I thought you should know.
Now, so this topic, it's not one that I chose. No, I did not choose our podcast of three cis men to do a topic telling people about menstruation. No, this was voted on by our patrons. So you can thank them for this lovely little periodical period chat.
Beautiful.
Very good.
Yes. Shall we get into it?
Yes.
What do you know about periods? What is a period?
We've got an expert in the house.
Okay. Damn. You know what? I don't even really know.
You're lucky you're here.
Period refers to the menstrual cycle, or specifically just the bleedy bit.
So give me a sec.
Sorry, Curry.
So a period generally refers to your period. Generally refers to your to menstruation, not the menstrual cycle, just the menstruation itself.
Oh, okay, I see. So there's a menstrual cycle and menstruation. Okay, yes. Thank you.
Menstruation is just one small part of the menstrual cycle. The part that it's named for, one could even say. So a period is that part at the start of your menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. So when you have your period, you're like, yes, it's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new menstrual cycle.
Very
for
much
me.
How it feels.
It's when someone bleeds from their vagina for a few days. And for most people, this happens every 28 days. Or so. I should say, by the way, when I'm saying people, I do mean AFAB people, people assigned female at birth, and maybe some other people as well. I don't know your specifics. That's what I mean when I say people. I don't just mean a random smattering of the population. Very specific.
People who menstruate.
So for most people, this happens. Sorry, again, when I say most people, I don't mean for most people. For most people that menstruate, just to be clear. So for most people, this happens every 28 days or so. But you could have it more frequently or less frequently. And it can be anywhere from a 21-day cycle to a 40-day cycle.
14?
40. 21 to 40.
Yeah. Okay.
4-0.
4-0.
That'd be pretty nice.
It's not
nice.
That much longer. It's only 12 days longer, isn't it?
Oh, the full cycle.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You were thinking. You
no. Bleeding for 40 days. I was like, that sounds like hell.
That's just, you must, well, some people might, to be fair. Someone must have at some point in history. Yeah.
Probably.
So your period can last from 3 to 8 days. But usually they last for about 5 days, and bleeding usually is heaviest in the first 2 days.
I would agree.
You would agree? Good. You're on par. You're on bang on average here.
Bless has done some experiments and can confirm.
Imagine, right? Sitting on this podcast and hearing all this and you're like, 5 days? Mine is like 40 days. What is going
on? Yeah, I know. Imagine that's how I found out.
You guys have got it easy.
I'd be so on edge listening to this, being like, So when it's heaviest, the blood will be red, but on lighter days, it could be pink, brown, or black. You'd lose about 30 to 70 mils of blood during the period, but you can bleed more, which might be fine, might not be. See a doctor if it's not.
If it's a significant amount more,
yeah,
maybe
I mean, like,
someone.
If it's 5 liters, you're probably dead, so don't worry too much about it. But
I'd go to your GP if it's 5 liters.
Yeah, well, and I should say it's not just blood, but we'll get into that in a bit.
Interesting.
So they usually start around the age of 12, but you can start earlier or later. I'm going to be saying that a lot, by the way, because there is quite a bit of variation in this. It's not a set in stone. But you can also be quite delayed, but that's not usually an issue. You could most people will start having regular periods by the ages of 16 to 18. So if you're not 16 or 18 yet and you're thinking, oh no, they're not regular, don't worry too much about it. Speak to a doctor though. Don't take like my advice is like, I'm not an expert.
But the man on the internet said I didn't have to worry.
Almost every time I say something that could be construed as medical advice, like even if it's in a joking manner, I just think about someone sitting in front of their GP and being like, the GP being like, well, why didn't you tell me this? Well, the man on the internet said that it was fine.
Corey from SciGuys said.
Seek medical advice if you're worried. Don't listen to me. So we're going to very briefly talk about some other things surrounding periods. And we're going to get into the actual science of it. And then some other things like the history of people studying it. Because funnily enough, throughout history, science has been done mostly by men. And specifically men that don't menstruate. And specifically ones that don't really care to understand what's going on with women. Mm. But we'll get into that in a bit. So PMS, premenstrual syndrome, we're just going to briefly touch on that. We could do a whole episode on it if we want to, but we're not going to right now. It's changes in your body's hormone levels. Basically, during your menstrual cycle, your hormone levels fluctuate. And just before your period, you can get like quite a few changes because of the fluctuation of hormones. So there are quite a few symptoms. You could feel bloated, breast tenderness, have mood swings, feel irritable, have spotty skin or greasy hair, and a loss of interest in sex as well. That's another symptom. But also there could be lots and lots of different symptoms. So it's not just limited to these ones. There are many more. And usually they just start to get better when you start your period and go a few days afterwards. But also bear in mind that this doesn't happen to everyone that has periods, just some people. So there's also menopause, which comes at the end. It quite literally is the end of your period. Not every month, the end of all of them, the end of all things.
It's the grand finale.
You basically have periods until you hit menopause, which usually happens when you're in your 40s or sort of 50s. In the UK, the average age for menopause is 51. Little fun fact for you. It's on the NHS website. Don't know why it's hugely relevant. Well, I mean, I suppose it is relevant if you want to know what the average is and you're going to.
Would it mean if you had a country, say, that had an average menopausal age that was significantly earlier or significantly later on average? Would that mean anything?
Could mean lots of things.
I'm just interested to know.
Probably means something.
Yeah.
It means whether it's important
they
or not.
Stop having periods earlier. No, it could mean lots of things. I know that menstruation can be affected by nutrition, so it could be that. It could be genetic, potentially, as well. It could be lots of different things. It could be a hormonal thing, so it could be something to do with hormones in, I don't know, food. If people are putting hormones in food, not that they do that. But it could be down to any number of things. It could mean anything. You know, it's like asking the question, one country having a sort of higher life expectancy mean? It could mean a number of things, you know? There could be any number of factors that go into that. So, yeah, it could mean something, but I don't know specifically what. So, as I was saying, menopause, you basically before menopause, your periods could start to become less frequent in sort of months or years leading up to it. but also they can just stop like that.
Oh, didn't know that. Just stop.
Without any warning. And yeah, so menopause is the end. We might get into a bit more of that later. But first, before we get into that, I want to talk about what actually happens in humans when, I was going to say, when we menstruate.
collectively. Yeah, when all that'd be nice, guys.
I will share the burden of taking responsibility for menstruation. I will not menstruate myself, but I will be there in spirit.
Let's collectively own the means of menstruation.
Okay, calm.
The means.
Seize the means of men. So I'm going to start off by talking about hormonal control. I told you that hormones can fluctuate throughout the menstrual cycle. So let's get into that. Essentially, there is a thing in your brain. There are lots of things in your brain, but I'm going to talk about one thing in particular, the pituitary gland. Do you guys know about the pituitary gland?
That's the thing. Yes. It's the small little, it's like this big. And it's right in the center of your brain at the brainstem, right? I've no idea what it does. I just know what it is.
I think you might be thinking of the pineal gland, Jan.
I think I might be thinking of that. So repeat your question.
It doesn't exactly matter. No, it doesn't exactly matter where the pituitary gland is in the brain. It tells us a lot about it.
Jan is right, though. It is like basically there as well. They're all all the glands are hanging out around there. Yeah.
So I am
not,
right.
Not all of them. But yeah, so the pituitary gland is in the brain. I literally have it here in my next line. It's situated in a small recess at the base of the skull. Should have read on.
Jump was correct.
Wow. Look at you predicting.
Collect my $1 million prize.
Your third eye was so open when my brain was approaching that sentence.
Was working overtime to figure out where the pituitary gland is.
You should know where it is. It's right next to it. It's right there.
Yeah, I know. Next door neighbors. Knock, knock.
So. There are two or three sort of hormones that are gonadotropic hormones. I'm just going to talk briefly about those. Still laughing at that joke. We've got follicle stimulating hormone, FSH, luteinizing hormone, LH, and then there's also potentially luteotrophic hormone, that's LTH. You got that?
Mm. Okay.
It doesn't really matter what the full names are. Just know I'm going to be talking about FSH, LH, and LTH.
Okay.
Yeah. So FSH is secreted a lot in the first half of the menstrual cycle. And then LH peaks at the middle of the cycle. And then we think that that sort of back and forth between those two is what makes the follicle cells in the uterus sort of... ripen almost. It makes the
that's an interesting word to use.
it's the word that's on the page. We think it's what causes ovulation, this sort of release of eggs. So the pituitary gland makes the ovary produce estrogens and progesterone. We know what those are from the last episode you were on, Bliss. Why don't you go listen to that if you haven't already? It's called
Bliss
something. I don't, science of birth control, I think.
That's it.
The birth control episode. Go listen to that if you want, but you don't need to for this. Basically, it makes the pituitary gland, makes the ovaries produce estrogens and progesterones. Those are basically sort of feminizing hormones. Essentially, you can think of them like that, the simplification. But there's also a sort of negative feedback loop there, which means that the estrogens inhibit the output of FSH from the pituitary gland. And then stimulate the output of LH. So if you produce, basically FSH will then make sort of the ovaries produce estrogen, which will then sort of decrease the whole sort of cycle. Yes. And then also progesterone is, we think that it kind of limits output of LH. So estrogens inhibit the output of FSH and progesterone inhibits output of LH. So they each inhibit the output of sort of the opposite hormone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's kind of a rhythmic cycle there where you get the pituitary gland starts working like over time. It's like, let's get it going.
Yeah.
And then the ovary is like, okay, maybe like, okay, I'm going to get going, bro, but you should maybe chill out. And then it's like, okay, I'll chill out for a bit. But it's like, yeah, no, actually, I'm going again, you know?
Yes.
Because once the pituitary gland sort of slows down, it stops stimulating the ovary. So the ovary stops working to sort of decrease the output of the pituitary gland. So the pituitary gland starts working harder again,
yeah.
Which then makes the ovary, which then...
Wow.
Can I just clarify? You know when you mean like get going?
Yes.
Are you saying that's when...
It's that's just producing hormones. Just producing hormones.
Okay. So that's not a specific part of the cycle.
Yeah, so realistically, the part of the cycle that it is isn't super relevant for what we're talking about right now. It's just the idea that I want you to take from this is that the pituitary gland makes the ovaries make hormones, which then limit the pituitary gland, which slows down its output of hormones, which then means that the ovary sort of slows down, which then speeds up the pituitary gland.
Yeah, and they work back and forward
back and forward. It's that rhythmic sort of, and that's how you get this. That's how you get a cycle, effectively. Mm. Yeah,
yes.
Because it's just it's very cool,
very clever.
It's very clever. You say it's clever. It's just nature. It's just what happens if you just leave something for
millions and millions of years.
Just leave some chemicals. Just leave some chemicals on a planet for a while and
they'll organize themselves. They'll figure it out.
They might sort it out. But let's get into what actually happens in the cycle. So before we talk about that, I want to ask you all a question.
Mm.
Besides humans, what other animals menstruate?
Ooh.
Would it be all mammals?
You'd think it would be all mammals.
You would
nearly
think
all mammals.
Nearly all mammals.
Oh, you'd think it'd be nearly all mammals, wouldn't you?
Is it just us?
Yeah.
It's not just us.
Okay.
It's somewhere between nearly all mammals and just us.
Have you never seen a dog with a pair of pants on, Jam?
With a pair of pants on? No.
So when your dog has a period, one thing that people do is they get a pair of pants, human pants, they cut a little tail hole in it, and then they put a bit of human-like panty liner on it, and then the dog menstruates onto the panty liner rather than all over your carpet and your sofa.
I was today years old when I found out dogs have periods.
They don't.
They don't.
No, what?
They
don't. Wait, hang on.
So why was my friend always putting pants on her dog?
It must be something. Because I've been to dog cafes. That's weird, but you know in South Korea. Basically, they had nappies on a lot at the dog cafes. And I assumed it was because of they were on their periods.
It might have been because they were inside and they didn't
want them to... Yeah, they didn't want to have them peeing and pooing.
Yeah, it could be for a number of reasons. But yeah, it's not actually a period. It's kind of more of a discharge. This is the thing. I initially thought that it was just people that menstruate. And I was confused about this because I was like, why is it only people? Why is it only us? But there's a lot of things that we are the only ones that do it. Like, having thumbs. That's something that is pretty unique to us.
Mm.
But no, there is a sort of explanation for it. So I'll just run you through what generally happens with most other animals. Yeah? So... in sort of, we'll use sheep as an example because that's the example I've got in front of me here. But you can make some changes and it will probably apply to dogs. In fact, I've got something up here that applies to dogs. So we'll go into dogs once we've gone into sheep. So what happens with sort of wild sheep is there's only one breeding season a year. And their reproductive organs kind of change during that breeding season. And it's effectively... eggs are released from the ovaries. They've got more blood flowing to that whole area. Their uterus grows. And the lining of the uterus, the sort of cells on the sort of inside of the uterus, on the sort of, I say the inside, it's all the inside. the cells on the wall of the uterus start to sort of get thicker and ready to, take an egg, a fertilized egg, and, get going with it. Make a whole baby. So what happens then is there is a discharge of blood and mucus from the uterus and vagina. And that's when you're able to, not you, but a sheep would be, a ram would be able to, go in and do his business.
Yes.
So
okay,
that discharge isn't the shedding of the lining. Mm. That discharge is basically at the start of the most sort of, fertile period when you're able to get in and get out.
So is it almost like they have a cycle that lasts a whole year?
Kind of, yeah. Okay, so if this is the thing. So usually they'll get pregnant. So these are the wild sheep, right? So usually after that, they'll get pregnant because there'll be a ram that, it's like, bro, let's go. But if they don't get pregnant, the changes sort of just, the changes kind of like go backwards. Until the next breeding season, at which point they then, happen again.
Like in Tenet.
Yes.
I've still not seen it.
Well, Lucas just spoiled the entire film.
I know. Well.
Yeah, so
that sheep is going back in time.
I was going to say it's just about sheep.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. Chris Nolan really knocked it out of the park with that one. I just never expect him to do so well. So in domesticated sheep, so we were just talking about wild sheep. They've got that sort of one period of, shouldn't say the period. They've got that sort of one point of being fertile, and then the changes just revert until the next breeding cycle. Mm-hmm. At which point, boom, they happen again. But with a lot of domesticated sheep, there is more than one cycle in the breeding season. Ah. So if a ewe doesn't get sort of isn't impregnated straight away after the first cycle, there's a little sort of rest phase to have a little rest. And then they ovulate again. Another cycle happens where the reproductive system gets active again. And yeah, after each sort of period of breeding, there is a much longer resting phase. So effectively you've got the sheep for the majority of the year being in a resting phase, and then during the breeding season they'll have periods on and off again of being fertile, then resting again, then fertile, then resting again. Mm-hmm. Unless of course they get pregnant, in which case they'll just be pregnant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. But with most female primates, including humans, we are primates.
Yes.
Primates, humans.
What a primate.
There isn't a resting phase. You've just got an unbroken series of cycles just happening again and again.
That's like us, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you just said we were primate. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's so like us that it is us. Yeah. So that happens just throughout the year. So that effectively, with us, with people, we just don't have a breeding season. Our breeding season is all year round. We're just horny. Hornier than sheep. So that's the thing. With humans, we have a menstruation cycle that basically lasts all year. But with sheep was our example, they don't. They have one sort of breeding season. And some domestic sheep have kind of a cycle within that breeding season. Whereas some wild sheep, I might think even maybe all wild sheep, just have that sort of one sort of session of being like, let's get it going. And then that's it for the rest of the year. So yeah, dogs, basically, they've got one estrous cycle. An estrous cycle is basically like a menstruation from start to finish. That sort of cycle from start to finish. Just one. And this is from the American Kennel Club, by the way. So I'm pulling this up on the fly. So it looks like what they're saying is that when dogs go into heat, that is their estrous cycle. And they have an increase in estrogen and then a decrease. And then their ovaries release eggs. And that usually lasts about 3 weeks, but it can be anywhere from 2 to 4. And smaller dogs can go into heat 3 or 4 times a year, but bigger breeds can maybe only go to heat about once a year. Mm. So they have that one sort of one time every year. And it may be the same sort of discharge it's a similar sort of discharge that they could get as sheep, similar to sheep, that discharge. Effectively, they can have a sort of bloody looking discharge. And that isn't, as far as I'm aware, the same as menstruation.
Yeah.
It's slightly different. And I'll tell you for why. Because with menstruation, effectively what is happening is the lining of the uterus, as I've said, is being shed. But in other animals, that doesn't happen.
Right.
That it's reabsorbed, mostly.
That's the difference. Okay, yeah. That's interesting.
So as I said, the normal human menstrual cycle is about 28 days, but not everyone is regular. It can vary a lot. And yeah, essentially what happens is, to understand this, you need to know about the endometrium. I've been talking about the lining of the uterus, the womb. That is called the endometrium. It's basically sort of glands that open into the sort of uterine cavity. Mm-hmm. So at the end of menstruation, the endometrium is really thin, and the glands that make it up, they're short and straight. And then the hormones that we were speaking about before, from the pituitary gland, they basically start to get to work. That makes an egg, or a sort of proto egg in the ovaries, start to sort of form and get bigger, get ready to sort of come down the fallopian tube and sit in the ovary. So that starts happening. And essentially, that kind of gets the uterus ready to receive the egg. Yeah?
Yes.
So about the middle of the cycle, ovulation starts. And that's when the egg comes out of the follicle and comes out of the ovary, goes down the fallopian tube and goes into the uterus. And then after ovulation, the endometrium, the sort of lining of the uterine wall, gets big and ready to get that egg in. Because bear in mind, what the body's wanting to happen here is for the egg to be fertilized,
yep,
and basically a baby to grow in there. Mm-hmm. So it's getting it good and ready to support a little fetus, a little baby. Mm. So yeah, apparently this is true. the way that the endometrium looks at the end of the menstrual cycle is pretty similar to how it looks at the start of pregnancy. Because again, as I said, it's preparing to right. sort of do that. Yeah, if it's fertilized, then no menstruation, you mm-hmm. go into pregnancy. But if it's not fertilized, then the endometrium, it's just been built up over all that time, it breaks down and you start menstruating. So that's what menstruation is. It's not just blood. It is the tissue that made up the lining of the uterus, basically mm-hmm. just shedding. Mm-hmm. It breaks down and it comes out the only way that it can, through the vagina. So that is that. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, effectively, if you think of it, it's like the body getting ready to be pregnant and then realizing not getting pregnant, better get rid of all this stuff.
Yeah.
For pregnancy. And then
why don't we as humans reabsorb that when all the other animals seem to do that?
We have some theories to why that is, but we're not entirely sure.
Mm.
As far as I'm aware. There are some theories. We'll get into those later. But we're not entirely sure.
Try That's harder, nice, scientists.
They're trying hard. I mean, they're trying real hard. So
I like that it's like basically expecting a guest once a month, but you don't know when the guest is going to come. So you just clean the room top to bottom, get out all the waste. Just like you just prepare like a nice fresh room every month.
Yeah, and then trash it.
Yeah, well, then you ruin it. You use the room, but then you get it repaired just because someone could show up at any time. You don't know.
Okay, but yeah, you're expecting a guest. You're like, man, this guest is going to come. I don't know who the guest is, but hopefully this guest is going to come. I'm getting really excited. Okay, I'm going to paint the walls. Day. I'm going to put that broken bed back together, build it all up nice and comfy for them. And then, oh, gosh, it's been 28 days.
Oh, no, the next month.
The guest isn't
Tear
arriving.
Down all the wallpaper.
Bring an extra. Throw it all out of your house. That's it. No, and then you order new furniture and it all comes.
And you build
it
up again.
You put new paint on. It's all good.
Very good. So that's kind of more of the science behind menstruation mm-hmm. at a kind of pretty basic level. Basically, again, just to go over it one more time, you've got a uterus. Mm-hmm. Not everyone. Not you, Jam. You have a uterus. Do you?
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
I haven't checked, I'll be honest.
Well, that's the thing. You could have one.
I
you
could.
Just not know.
I just don't know.
You could, yeah, that's wild. Isn't Crazy. It? Man, I'm going to have a little... No, I've had an ultrasound. I don't have one. you've got a uterus. It's likely that you menstruate. Yep. If you're within your sort of, if you're in the age range of sort of about maybe 12 to about 50s, your 50s, so for about 4 years, you might menstruate. Basically, for every sort of 28 days, for 5 days, you will have sort of, not blood, but the lining of your uterus will be sort of shed and come out through the vagina. And then, you know, once it's done that, the body then gets ready again to build that lining back up again in preparation for a potential fertilized egg. Mm-hmm. And when there's no fertilized egg, the body just gets rid of it again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, this time, I swear. But it's not just as simple as that. There are some issues that might come with periods. Mm-hmm. For example, period pain. So it's a normal thing, period pain, which sucks, to be honest. Like, I mean, evolutionarily, I think that, you know, males really got the good side of this, you know, whereas
they picked the long straw.
Yeah. I mean, what sort of issue like that do like males have to deal with generally?
Your balls are a little bit sensitive.
Yeah.
So you, if you get kicked, then it's bad.
That's true.
But it's
that's
not true. A thing like this.
Oh, I, also, I don't get kicked for a week.
So once a month.
But then also, if you kick someone else, it doesn't really matter. You can kick someone, it hurts. Like, I feel like we're on almost a level playing field there.
Yeah, you're very true.
I was just reminded of when you were saying this. I was reminissing to
the time I got kicked in the balls.
Well, yeah. Well, not. Okay. I say reminiscing. I was reminiscing with my sister, who obviously cannot relate to being kicked in the balls, for she has none.
For she has none.
Dear sister, you have no balls.
But I was reminded when I was telling her about this, I was like, man, for a good few years of my life, a good portion of my day was spent not getting kicked in the balls. Now, obviously, a good portion of most of my days is spent not getting kicked in the balls. But what I mean is good portion of my day, like at lunchtime in primary school and in early secondary school, was spent being like, is someone going to kick me in the balls? Maybe. I'm on the lookout all the time. And it was just like, I do not miss that part of my life. It was so crap. Did either of you have anything like that?
No.
Well,
really?
My friends and I would slap each other in the face.
So basically, people with balls don't have the equivalent kind of pain or, you know, regular pain that... Well, apart from Luke when he was at primary school.
I was trying to think about how we got there to see how we could bring it back. Yes. I do think it's a little bit unfair biologically that 50% of the population just has to have a real rough time, you know.
And then we have to carry the baby.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
All I got to do
is... You guys should have a... If you're going to have a rough time, we should then carry the baby.
Right, yeah. Like,
that would be fair.
Even if getting kicked in the balls hurt as much, you don't have to put up with that for a week every month, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
You're exactly. Guaranteed a week every month for most people.
So period pain, like I said, common, normal part of the menstrual cycle. Wouldn't be too worried about it. Most people will get it at some point in their lives if they have periods. And it's usually muscle cramps, like I was saying before. And with some people, it can spread quite far. So it's usually muscle cramps in the sort of abdomen area, but it can go to your thighs and your back.
Lower back, yes.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, it's a bad one.
It could be sort of intense spasms, but it could be dull and constant, much like this podcast. But it could change between periods. Again, this is all very varied. Whenever you bring something into sort of human experience, things are never quite cut and dry. Mm-hmm. So there are sort of a lot of different symptoms that you can have, and they can all vary. You can even get pelvic pain if you're not on your period. And the reason that you get period pain is because the muscular wall of the uterus, it's basically sort of contracting, getting like this, tightening. It's kind of like contractions. Very, very, it's quite mild. And sometimes they can be so mild that you might not even notice them. Mm-hmm.
Ah.
But is that to get everything out?
I think so.
Yeah. You know what I mean by everything.
It's like squeezing squeezing a sauce bowl. You're like, got to get all that out. Then you stick the knife in there and wiggle it around, make sure you got the rest of it. Don't
the equivalent of a tampon.
No.
When you stick a knife.
I don't think you're wiggling that. Liz realizes she's been flagged tampons incorrectly for her.
I thought I used it like a knife.
Why am I going through so many of these?
Like a feather duster. Gotta get it all.
So the reason that it hurts as well is because when it contracts, it basically, think about it, it's squeezing, it can cut off the oxygen supply it can basically squeeze the sort of blood vessels, cut off the oxygen supply to those parts of your body, which then are like, hey, I don't have any oxygen. That hurts.
I see. That's
so you, because yeah, whenever you're deprived of oxygen, your body hurts. Think about it this way. You know, when you're when you're exercising, and then you start to get pain from like sort of running and mm-hmm. like not being able to breathe enough. That's because you go into anaerobic respiration. Basically, if you don't have enough oxygen, you go into this other way of making energy, which produces a toxin, which hurts. And so your body's like, oh, maybe you should try breathing, bro. Or fix me. So that's why that hurts. Contractions compress the blood vessels, stop oxygen from getting there. Your body's like, ouch. And it's the worst part about this is that when you have those contractions and your body releases the sort of the chemicals that make you feel pain, it also releases other chemicals that make the uterus contract more, which makes it more painful.
Why?
Your body doesn't like you. No, I'm joking. I don't actually know why. But that is that can happen. So it contracts, you're like, ouch, and it's like, ha 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 ha, you thought I got more in me. And we don't actually know why some people have more period pain than other people. But some we have a theory that some people, those chemicals that cause more contractions, they can have a buildup of that, which then just means more pain because it's contracting more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just briefly talk about trans guys and non-binary people. If you start taking testosterone, it's likely that your period will go away, but it's not... It could take a long time. It depends on the dose and a lot of other things. But if a lot of people seem to think, a lot of people think that being on testosterone for a certain period of time just means no more periods. That's not actually the case. So that's a bit of a misconception. Even if you, I think, look on the Planned Parenthood website, they'll say, I think they say that you, if you're trans and you take testosterone, you'll stop your period. Not actually true. It could take a long time. It just won't stop sort of straight away, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Could it come off and then back on again periodically?
Yeah, I think so. But that would depend. Again, it all depends on your dose.
Levels. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think generally, in the majority of cases, after a certain period of time on testosterone, mm-hmm. it will just stop. But leading up to that, it will sort of be lighter, shorter, and then it might just be spotting and things like that up mm-hmm. until the point where it stops. But also, you can just stop taking testosterone, it will come back again. So this idea that taking testosterone absolutely destroys, you can't ever have it again. No, it's not true. If you stop taking testosterone, it is very likely that it will come back.
Wow.
From Planned Parenthood. It won't come back from Planned Parenthood. I'm saying that piece of information is from Planned Parenthood.
I'll send it in the post. Right, here it is.
They took it away. Like... But they keep it in a little fridge somewhere.
It's like,
and give back to you.
It's like Austin Powers mojo, isn't it? You know, you just take it out, pop it in Planned Parenthood there for a while. Oh, Planned Parenthood, can I have it back, please?
There you go. There's a period injection.
So you can have irregular periods. It's not uncommon. But that basically means that the length of the cycle keeps changing. So if it's normal to have periods, say once every 28 days, you could have 14 days between periods, and then 28 days, and then 30, and then 24, and it can fluctuate.
Mm-hmm.
Which I can imagine makes it a lot harder to manage.
Also, can I just want to briefly say that the fact that so many teenage boys just don't really understand or know very much about periods at all for like almost the entirety of the time they're in school is in like how do people at menstruate just hide that? Like, I mean, I know why they do it because of the patriarchy, but like,
yeah,
that seems like a really difficult thing for like half the population just to not really bring up.
Oh, you mean not even just in schools not being taught it, but you mean people who menstruate not saying it?
Yeah, like, because
not mentioning it.
Yeah,
and then having to go on like nothing's wrong.
It is a really weird thing in school of like, if you're on your period and how you will get to the bathroom with a product like a tampon or a pad. It's like this whole thing of like, right, I need to take my rucksack with me. But then if you take your rucksack to the toilet, then people know anyway.
Right.
So it's like, it's really strange, but it should be fine.
Yeah.
But like, it's seen as a thing that you need to hide.
See, my like in school, my whole thing about going to the toilets was like, how do I manage to go to the toilet at the same time as my friend without the teacher knowing that we're just going to I wonder how we'll manage to do that.
You just get to hang out in the toilet.
You're doing like a whole covert operation of like psyops here. Like, if I take the bag, they'll know. But if I don't take the bag, what if I just take the bag every single time?
Yes, I'll be the person who takes the bag to the toilet all the time.
But this is the thing, right? I promise you, most teenage boys in school will just not be aware of this.
Yeah,
they just won't pay attention at all. They'll have no idea, which is hilarious to me. There's this whole thing going on that is just we're completely oblivious to.
Especially even the fact that it is so young, you can start when you're like 12. It's not, you know, you've not learned a lot about kind of sex education or any of those things by that point. So yeah, it's
ridiculous. Yeah, like the fact that, I mean, I wouldn't trust a 12-year-old to do almost anything. The fact that they've got to be responsible for that is just
to deal with.
So I just want to, I just think this is really interesting. I just want to bring it up because I'm sure there are quite a few people in our audience that are listening to this episode and being like, oh, I've never thought about this.
Yeah.
It's probably a fair few. And I just want to highlight that we're not really, at least, I mean, gosh, I've been out of school for a little bit. So it might have changed. I don't know. I wasn't really taught about this very much in school at all. And there is a very sort of shameful thing around periods and menstruation. And most sort of, I mean, cis guys in particular just don't understand it at all. But we'll really only think about it or use it as a means to degrade women by being like, oh, she doesn't like what I said. Oh, she must be on her period. And that's as far as their sort of understanding of it goes, is that, you know, she gets angry when she's on her period, like, which is just ridiculous.
I think it's interesting though that the shame does then lead girls to not know as much as they could, because obviously the fact that I started this episode by saying I can't remember what a period is in terms of what it is in the menstrual cycle and even the science behind it. I know we were taught it at school, but it wasn't. Yeah, I think it probably was in a way that you then, if you feel shameful about something, you don't want to ask questions, you don't want to engage as much, and that affects girls too, because they're having to deal with it without properly understanding it, or
which is it's just harmful for everybody. I mean, particularly women, like obviously particularly women, but it is harmful for everyone, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of sexism that's just so comfortably ingrained in our society that we don't really think about it. Like the fact that I think Scotland just made sanitary products
Free.
Really?
Free for anyone that needs them.
Wow.
Which, yeah, of course. You know what I mean? Like, of course. I mean, yeah,
that seems like an obvious thing that should be everywhere.
Because how long have condoms been free, you know?
Well, yeah,
you can get access to free condoms. Yeah.
Not like having sex is a choice as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
that's
so true. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous to me that it's something that has taken so many countries so long to even consider doing.
Are they the first country to do it?
Yeah.
Are we? I didn't even know that.
Scotland is the first country, yes.
Wow. First country
to ever exist.
Oh my goodness.
but yeah, I don't know. I just think it is a really one of those big issues that is kind of almost insidious that we don't really think about, that we really need to work on educating people. Because I've heard stories about boyfriends and fathers and whatnot saying, oh, why don't you just hold it in?
What?
So just having no concept at all.
Yeah, like no idea how it really works. Yeah. And like, can you not just like try and hold it in for a bit before, you know what I mean?
People being
embarrassed to buy tampons and other sort of sanitary products. It's just ridiculous. And there is no, if 50% roughly of the population does this for 40 odd years of their life, like, I mean, what, just over half of their life, maybe it's something we should be just fine with.
Yeah.
That we should all be aware of, because it will affect all of us at some point.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It just seems mental to me that this is something that we've managed to sort of make an awful, shameful thing and just make life harder for the people that menstruate. It just sucks. Speaking of sucking, we're talking about irregular periods. So,
excuse me.
because having a regular period can suck because it's difficult to manage.
Anyway,
so speaking of sucking is not a particularly good segue.
I love that.
Why ever not, Luke? After puberty, most people will then develop a regular cycle with a similar length between periods. But it's not uncommon for it to vary a bit. And it could just be normal for you to have irregular periods. That can be a perfectly normal thing. It's not the sign necessarily of an underlying issue. Here are some sort of common causes other than it just being normal for you. It could be puberty, because obviously when you go through puberty, your body is kind of like starting this whole process. So it doesn't necessarily start right at the gate, 100% full sprint. It's like, let me get into this. Yeah, let me work this one out. Early pregnancy. Early in your pregnancy, if you take your pregnancy test, you'll find out if you're pregnant or not. Some types of contraception, particularly hormonal contraception, like the pill, that can affect it, obviously. In fact, that is often used to regulate periods, like we spoke about in that episode. Extreme weight loss or weight gain, or exercise or stress, excessive exercise and excessive stress, those can all cause irregularity. Obviously, if you think about it this way, if you're severely underweight, your body doesn't really have the resources that it can divert to this. So it's like, okay, making a baby is not your priority. Let's divert it to, I don't know.
Yeah, that also happens if you're like a really, you already said extreme, loads of exercise. Like if you're really fit, I think it happens as well.
Well, the thing about fitness is doing a lot of extreme exercise is putting your body under a lot of stress. Because remember, that's how muscle growth happens effectively. You stress the muscles and then they sort of repair and become stronger, roughly. So any kind of excessive stress, extreme weight gain, weight loss, exercise, or just plain, I'm stressed, that can affect it because your body doesn't necessarily want to waste energy. Bear in mind,
it's not a priority.
Yeah, bear in mind, bodies are set up in survival mode all the time of, okay, what can I get away with using this energy for that?
Yeah.
And if it's a waste, I'm going to try and not do it.
Okay.
So there's there's that as well. And then there's also medical conditions like polycystic ovary syndrome or thyroid issues. Those can cause irregular periods. But as I said, could just be normal. So don't be too worried if consult a doctor if you feel you need to. But you should probably should consult a doctor, but don't be stressed thinking it's the end of the world because it could just be normal. Yeah. There's also endometriosis, which is something that really needs more study. I think it's something that we've been studying a lot more recently. But again, this is what happens when you have a society that is dominated by sort of one group for a long period of time. You just have areas of research that are barren. So endometriosis, we've got a lot more. We're learning a lot more about it. We have done in the recent years. But basically, it's what happens when the lining of your womb, that tissue that we were talking about, the endometrium, it starts growing elsewhere.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it can grow in the ovaries, the fallopian tubes, if you have it, you may not have symptoms, but the symptoms of it can be like painful, heavy, irregular periods, pelvic pain, pain during or after sex, pain or discomfort when going to the toilet, bleeding from your bottom, it says. This is the NHS. And feeling tired all the time. And endometriosis can be just awful. Awful. And we should really know more about it. And I would talk more about it, but it really deserves its own episode. So you might see that a bit in the future.
It's crazy. I've heard the name before. I've heard endometriosis, but I never knew what it was.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and it can be really, I mean, if you think about it, if that tissue is growing elsewhere and then shedding from places that it's not supposed to shed, it can really hurt.
It
would, because it hurts enough already. And then also there is toxic shock syndrome, which I want to briefly talk about because this is something that, I mean, I don't know if this is common for any of you. I didn't know about this for a very long time. I found out about it, I feel like, just before I went to uni, or maybe when I was in uni.
Yeah, I guess it's because I think I probably heard about it from maybe even the tampon box, if that is the way, if that is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
If that is the correct thing.
Yeah.
I think that it's from, you can get it from wearing a tampon for too long.
Yeah, which I feel like that's something that you should teach in schools, you know.
Yeah.
It
could have been, but I just don't remember exactly.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
But toxic shock syndrome, it's rare, but it can be deadly. Mm-hmm. And essentially what happens is you get a bacterial infection. It could be Staphylococcus aureus or Streptococcus pyogenes. It's just a bacterial infection. And this bacteria is present on your skin already. But if it gets deeper into the body, it can start releasing toxins, which is bad, obviously. And if it's treated quickly, totally fine. If it's not treated quickly, you could potentially die. But don't be too worried about this, because the incidence of it in the US is about 0.8 to 3.4 per 100,000 people. Okay. So it's not even remotely 1%. It's 0.00. It's very rare. And it is usually associated with tampon use in young people, but it can affect anyone of any age. This is not just an issue that affects people that menstruate or use tampons. It's an issue that affects anyone because the bacteria is on your skin. Mm-hmm. If you get the bacteria inside of you, it can, start growing and releasing those toxins. Mm. The only thing that puts people that use tampons at a slightly higher risk is that you are regularly inserting something from outside of your body to sit inside your body for a good period of time.
Did not know that's how it. Yeah, that's what caused it.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, and so if you have one in for too long, a tampon in for too long, it can cause that. But again, like I said, bear in mind 0.8 to 3.4 per 100,000 people. In the United States.
So it's just the fact that if you left it in for, the longer you leave it in, the more chance you're giving the bacteria, if you have brought some inside, to grow and establish itself. Is that what it is?
Because you're giving it, I suppose the way that it works is the tampon is a really good source for it to grow, because it's sucking in all the sort of blood and protein and all that, which is really good for bacteria to grow. And it's nice, it's warm and it's moist, so bacteria love that generally. So the symptoms start suddenly, get worse very quickly. So they are high temperature, flu-like symptoms, feeling and being sick, diarrhea, a sunburn-like rash, lips, tongue, and the whites of your eyes turning a bright red, dizziness or fainting, difficulty breathing, and confusion. And as I said, it's bacterial infection. And they can treat it basically with antibiotics. But there are other things that can increase your risk of it. Using tampons, like I said, sort of the female barrier contraceptives, I think it's called the sort of diaphragm.
Okay.
App,
yeah.
You know, those ones, like skin issues, like cuts or burns, childbirth, picking your nose a lot, till you get a nosebleed. And you also stuff up your nose when you get a nosebleed. Basically anything that allows blood and stuff to pool and inside your body.
Gosh, I always do that.
Okay. That's really bad. When I get nosebleeds, I stuff tissue up.
Yeah, because I'm just oh, that's easy then.
But it increases your risk. But it's unlikely. But yeah, I just wanted to, also it's not spread from person to person, and you don't get an immunity to it, so you can get it more than once. I just wanted to bring this up briefly because I personally didn't know about this for a long time. I don't think it's something people should know about, but bear in mind that if you're using tampons safely, you shouldn't worry about too much about toxic shock syndrome. It's just kind of remember not to leave them in for too long. It's like I shouldn't have my contacts in for more than 12 hours a day. There are days where I have my contacts in for longer than 12 hours a day because I forget.
Yeah.
There are days that I've fallen asleep with my contacts in, and generally I have been fine, but it's just a sort of reminder of you should probably be careful. Because it could be dangerous, but it's not something to keep yourself worried about, because you stay safe, you'll be fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. So that is menstruation. But don't worry if, you love this episode and you're sad that it's ending, it'll be back in a month.
Imagine. Should we just upload this episode once a month for the rest of the year?
Really funny.
Oh, wait. Have you already got one?
So yes, you will.
Let's do it.
So yes, we'll do exactly that.
Yeah, Yeah, so that is just a sort of overview on menstruation. Obviously, there are a lot of topics that we just briefly cover. So if you want to hear more about any of those, please do let us know. And if you want to be in with the chance of actually influencing what topics we do, then you should go ahead to our Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuys. You can sign up there and, you know, you'll get to choose episode topics. You get to submit episode topics and you get to vote on them, which is very fun. That's what this one was. So now it is time to thank our wonderful patrons. But first off, I would like to thank one patron in particular. Do you guys know what patron that is?
Would it be it is Ashley?
Ashley Mool?
It is correct. Very, very big thank you to you, Ashley, for being in our Boaty McBoatface tier, being little executive producer on this
episode. The first ever Boaty McBoatface patron.
I'm not going to lie. When I made that tier, I didn't expect anyone. I was like, I'll make this tier. But no one's going to use it.
It's one of those things that people do. They're just like, we'll make a ridiculous tier that no one's ever going to pick.
I was like,
it's just funny to have it.
Yeah. I was like, this is a fun tier for anyone that wants to join. But I doubt anyone will want. But we're there now. Look at that. Thank you very much, Ashley. Amazing.
By the sounds of the message we received from Ashley, you're currently making some bread. Is that correct? Well, you can't reply, but I hope you're having a nice time making some bread.
Give Ashley some time to respond.
Ashley is a baker.
I think it'll be a few weeks before Ashley responds. I hope you enjoyed your bread.
If you want to be thanked like Ashley, you can head over to our Patreon page and become a Boaty McBoatface tier patron. But otherwise, you can just join our Patreon because we love all of our patrons equally. So, why don't we thank them?
Thank you to Eleanor Wickens.
Thank you, Emmy Greenwood.
Thank you, Raimi Saldomando.
Thank you to Hannah Amelia.
Thank you to Nikolai.
Thank you to Jort Hermanus.
Thank you to Rebecca Ritchie.
Thank you to Mars Loneski. Loneski?
Lonesky.
Loneski. Lone Sky. Maybe.
Thank you to Martin Batty.
Thank you to Kathy Chapman.
Thank you to Michael O'Keefe.
Thank you to Colette.
Thank you very much to Holly Cooper.
Thank you to Dominika.
Cziejowska.
Sorry, I wasn't sure how to pronounce your name, so I got a computer to do it for me. Dominika.
Cziejowska.
Thank you, Link.
Thank you to Rebecca Felchel.
Thank you to Cameron
Zakreski.
Just to be safe.
Thank you, Ben Holland Young.
Thank you to Max Alexander.
Thank you, Tori Van Dam.
And one more thanks to Ashley Mueller.
Once again. Thank you, Ashley.
But that is it from us. We hope you enjoyed that little taster session on periods. Bliss. Where can they find
taster
you?
Taster session.
Don't call it a taster session.
Amazing.
I thought that would slip under the radar. Bliss, where can they find you?
Here, what do you mean?
Oh, wait, no, you don't want them to follow you. Never mind.
You can find me in my house.
Come round.
Thank you all for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys or find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and now TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am not Corey everywhere.
I'm Champkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cutforth everywhere.
I'm Bliss.
Yay!